Welcome to Compassion Collective. This episode is brought to you by your hosts, Michaela Swee and Susan Murray, co-founders of Compassion Collective. Music by singer-songwriter Michael Shines.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Nice to see you, Suze.
Nice to see you.
So for this episode, we had a few things in mind. And this is actually an episode that we've been talking about getting up and out to folks for a while now. So we're really excited to talk about some of the things that we've got planned for today. So what we were thinking is kind of jumping in and giving folks a sense, this is actually really important in CFT, is a sense of how our emotion regulation systems, sometimes called affective regulation systems, how they work, right? And CFT actually has a theory about this. So we'll talk a little bit about affective system regulation and something that in CFT you'll often hear people call the three circles, the three modes of being. So we're going to give an introduction to that because having an understanding of that, I think both Susan and I have felt, is super important and helpful. And then that's going to kind of segue us into this conversation about our relationships with ourselves. And what it means to settle into quiet time with oneself, which a lot of us are very phobic of or resistant to. And then talking about what it means to occupy a space of calm and what it takes to intentionally cultivate that. So that's our plan for today. Is that right, Suze? Would you say that was an accurate?
It sounds great. Yep.
All right.
That's exactly it.
Okay, so let's jump into talking a little bit about the three circles and the three modes of being.
Yeah, so just as a bit of a review, because we have talked about this before, but if you are new to the podcast, compassion-focused therapy outlines an emotion regulation model that contains three circles. One is drive, which is our mode or set of emotions and behaviors that are involved in pursuing goals. I also sort of think about it as like striving. And so this is where we are going to be motivated to, you know, maybe go back to school and get that degree, or maybe go get that job, or maybe you see someone that you're interested in and you want to ask them out, or whatever this might look like for you. It's goal pursuit. And so that's drive, obviously very important for us evolutionarily. And then there's the threat detection system, which is, again, very important for us evolutionarily to be aware of threats in our environment, to be focused on threats that maybe could be there, right? So worry, or to think about threats from the past, even so like dwelling on things. So our prefrontal cortex has developed to allow us to really kind of stay in threat mode more than maybe, other animals. But mm-hmm. We have this built-in system to be aware of threats, to respond to threats, to try to protect ourselves from threats. So those are two systems that are very important for us and are often very active. There's another whole emotion system called the soothing system, which is really more associated with being safe and calm. This is where we feel cared for, we feel connected to other people. And I think that what can happen is that we can kind of get to have this assumption that if we strive enough, if we achieve our goals, if we protect ourselves enough from threat, that we are just going to, by default, occupy this calm, safe emotion state. And the problem is that we spend all of our time practicing being in striving mode or drive mode or threat focus mode, that we actually, I don't know that we all know what to do with the opportunity to be calm or how to bring ourselves to a calm, safe space. So I just want to I guess, have our conversation really go there today, to talk about what is it that we mean when we talk about the soothing system? How can we practice that and cultivate it? And to normalize a little bit that it might not be something that feels really familiar or natural or even safe.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a couple of things about that I think are, and a couple further thoughts about the three modes of being, the three interactive systems that's important, is that in terms of this safeness, we also call it like the affiliative system, because it's all about attachment and connection mm-hmm. with ourselves and with other people around us. Mm-hmm. There are real reasons why that circle, we do an exercise, the three circles exercise, where we can, and we have actually a handout that we'll put on the website, the Compassion Collective website, that you can download and sort of do this exercise for yourself. It's really interesting to look at, okay, if I map out my threat mode, my drive mode, my soothing affiliative mode, how big are those three circles right now in my life? Or just on average in a given week, how big usually are those circles for me? How much time am I spending in each of those modes, mm-hmm. right? And generally what we see for many of us, especially people who struggle with anxiety and high stress, right, is that oftentimes the threat mode is huge for people who are big strivers and perfectionists and tend to be very high functioning and constantly on the go and doing and trying mm-hmm. and right. The drive mode tends to be very big, right? And then we've got this tiny little pea-sized soothing affiliative system, which is so underdeveloped. And I think one thing that's really important is to think about, if you come from a background where you've experienced trauma, or early in your life you grew up in a family or a system where care and soothing wasn't modeled and you didn't get that, right? It's not a surprise that this mode of being is going to be A, foreign and totally underdeveloped, right? Because we learn from modeling, right? We learn from our very early attachments. And it's also not going to be surprising that this mode may not feel like a safe or comfortable mode to occupy or to be in.
So particularly if there have been mixed messages with sort of caring and threat, right?
Yes,
so that,
yes.
That whenever someone enters into kind of a safe, more vulnerable, letting your guard down space, that's become associated with the vulnerability to threat. That's important to acknowledge too.
That's actually really important, right? Because a lot of times what we'll see is early in life, you know, kids, young kids will, that those two states will be really confused, right? That mm-hmm. people will, as Susan, as you just said, people will start to let their guards down and feel safeness, feel connectedness. And then that may be where abuse happens or where some kind of mixed messaging happens. And then the threat system overtakes the soothing system, you know, that was even in the process of kind of unfolding, of, you know, developing itself. And then that process gets really stuck there. Right. So I think that that's super important to think about. I also, the other thing that I just wanted to mention as we're talking about the three systems that's super important is the drive system, right? A lot of us think of that system as always being good. Like if this is about striving and getting things done and doing things, and like that's fantastic, right? Yes. You know, yes, the drive mode is associated with, you know, that kind of intensity, that high, that interest, enthusiasm, excitement, all of that. And I think what's important, well, there are a few things that are important here. One thing that's also important is to think about some of the ways that we chase intensity in our lives, right? At the expense of being able to connect with ourselves in a more meaningful, truthful mm-hmm. way, and connect with people around us in more meaningful and truthful ways, whether that's through substances, alcohol, drugs, right? That's a big way. Food and how mm-hmm. people eat and what that sort of serves to give someone in terms of instant gratification or satisfaction, or, you know, so
dopamine,
exactly, right? Even things that we can think of too in terms of like self-harm behaviors, other self-destructive behaviors, oftentimes those are tied in with that drive system, right? So that's something that I think is important to be aware of too. So I think really what it comes down to is understanding that we need each of these three systems.
Right.
right? All three of them are necessary, and they've been necessary for the evolution of our species, for our survival, right? We need to be able to detect threat and danger. We need to be able to, you know, to reproduce, to get things done, especially in this society, in our advanced...
Right, and then to care for our offspring, right, the affiliative mode, and right. to calm some, you know, someone down, be calmed down. That's an important self-regulatory system that we have in place, or social system to regulate emotion so that we can continue our survival as a species. I think... evolutionarily, since evolution doesn't really care about us being particularly happy or zen, right? We are, our brains are really, really well, have well-worn pathways to basically detect threat in our environment, respond to it, anticipate it, and also to be sort of sensitized to salient rewards. And I think maybe there's a little bit less of a reward or something associated with being calm. It's less rewarded in our current cultural context, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and I think even evolutionarily speaking too, I think right. what you're saying is totally right, that we were designed to be able to go into threat mode, right? We weren't necessarily designed the same way to be able to go into soothing affiliative mode, even though that is a part of each of our attachment systems and mm-hmm. a part of what it means to nurture, care for offspring, you know, all of that. But I think that that's the reason why there's this really like hardwired, intense kind of flip into the threat mode and then stay there. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I always like to talk about too with folks that I think this is really helpful is thinking about, you know, in thinking about our species and how advanced and evolved we are, and thinking about how these modes operate together and how they can really go out of whack and the process gets sticky and tricky, is thinking a little bit about, you know, if let's say Susan has a dog, and let's say Susan's dog went out and got, like, let's say there was a big predator on the walk and sort of jumped out and scared him. And he thought that he was going to die immediately without even thinking. He goes into fight or flight and probably will run for his life to get away, right? And then when he's back at home with Susan and they're inside and cuddling, like, what happens to his system? Yeah, it calms. It comes down. It soothes. He's happy again, right? With a human being, if we went out on a walk and something terrible happened where we thought we were threatened or in danger or not safe, we have the same fight or flight response, right? Freeze, run, fight, you know? And then regardless of whatever we choose, chances are the next day when we're back in safety and that threat is no longer present, we're still going to have those thoughts. What if I hadn't run fast enough? What if the next time I go out, this happens again, right? So in that way, our minds really are different than a lot of other mammals' minds. And that's also how we can get stuck in these sort of threat loops. Right? That sure. even when we are safe, right, it can be really hard mm-hmm. to feel safe and tap into mm-hmm. our soothed, calmed, safe mode of being.
Right. And I think that we don't often learn or pay as much attention to what do I know that's going to calm me? What is, for me, what does it take for me to feel safe and calm? That's especially why it's been on my heart to have this episode, because I think it's important to talk about really consciously and intentionally ways to get to know yourself, get to cultivate this calm state.
Yeah. So that kind of brings us into this talking more about this calm state and quiet. You and I were talking a lot about the value of quiet and what it means when we are by ourselves. So many of us actually have very little time on our own, whether, you know, between work, between parent responsibilities or other obligations and responsibilities, right? Many of us are on the go a lot.
mm-hmm. And even when we're not, it's like there's, you know, you just see some bit of news or there's some social media that you get wrapped up in, right? So our minds are just constantly occupied. And I think this is, you know, not something necessarily new, but in terms of like a talking point, but it's true that I think folks are really losing the ability to stay with and sit with themselves. I have a lot of patients who have expressed to me challenges with being alone, with unstructured time, not just acting on the urge to leave yourself in some way, whether it's grab Instagram, whether it's turn on that show, whether it's, you know, call a friend. All those things can be fine and healthy and good. But if there's no time to just sit and be and settle, then there isn't really an opportunity to reflect on your life, to see how you're feeling about things, check in. And I really think that's an opportunity for a lot of healing. Right. In silence.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, I think that's a really good example of like functioning in nonstop drive mode, right? Is the sort of like, what's my next thing? Okay. Yes. This meeting, this thing that's on my to-do list, I have to do this, I have to do that. Right. Like that's in drive mode. That's, you know, you're in drive mode if you're in that space. And I've noticed for myself, I spend so much time in drive mode, and I've noticed I relate a lot to what you're talking about because two thoughts on my mind. One thought is I've noticed that I'll have a meeting or a block of time that all of a sudden opens up in my week, and I'm initially really excited about that, like looking for, it's like, oh, it's going to be so nice, like some unstructured time. Mm-hmm. I can relax. I can, you know, and then when it comes, I should be doing something right now. I'm wasting time right now. I'm not doing anything meaningful right now. I'm just on my own right now. I'm not with other people. Right. I'm not, like, my self-critic kind of kicks in and is loud about all the things that I'm not doing right or doing wrong. And then all of a sudden the time that I do have feels tainted and icky and anxiety provoking and just
not pleasant.
No. Yeah. And I've noticed that pattern a lot for myself, which I've kind of been trying to get really curious about. And then the other thing that this just made me think of that I kind of told you about earlier is this, like, you know, there are days where I'll be going 9 hours straight without a break. And then when I finally do get a break, you know, which I'm like absolutely dying for, right? The first thing I do is I go on my phone and I start scrolling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I don't know if anyone else has done this, but I put like the time, there's an app that can track the amount of time you're spending on apps and the amount of screen time you're spending on a daily basis. It's terrifying. I mean,
right.
And what's mind-boggling to me is that in the moment I'm getting stimulation, I'm getting sated in some immediate type of way.
Right.
And then afterward, there's this really, I don't know if other people relate to this, there's this like emptiness that follows once you put that away and you no longer have that stimulation. So I think for me,
or
that's
that,
just
like stark contrast between like, yeah, information to like nothingness.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. It's a very stark contrast. And I think for me, I've just realized that place I go into, even if I'm by myself and it's quiet around me, but where I go into scroll, that's not quiet time for me.
No.
That's more noise.
Right.
It's more noise and it's more avoidance. Like if I'm being really honest with myself, like I'm avoiding something in those moments.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, this actually isn't sating me in a meaningful way.
Right. It's not, doesn't feel value aligned anymore, or like it's bringing you the value that you want.
Yeah.
I get that. I understand that. And I continue to be curious about this thing of why people have trouble staying with themselves. What are the fears there? Like what could come up? Mm-hmm. What is it that we have trouble with? And I love this quote from Pema Chodron in her book, The Wisdom of No Escape. She's talking about cultivating a better relationship with ourselves through the process of meditation. You can sit down in silence with yourself and simply see who you are in a gentle and precise way, continually being with yourself and learning how to acknowledge fully who you are, letting go of the tendency to fixate and dwell, appreciating the rareness and preciousness of being able to practice making friends with yourself.
Making friends with yourself.
Yeah.
And you know what? I love that quote. And it makes me think a lot. This was a phrase that I learned very early on when you and I started learning about CFT and exploring it. But this idea of learning to accompany oneself.
Mm-hmm.
I've always held on to that phrase and that image of like, what does it look like to accompany myself? Be a fellow traveler for me, for myself.
With me. Yeah.
With me. Right. And that's that. That was evoked for me in that last phrase in that passage.
Right. I think that is such a part of doing self-compassionate practices, is learning that you will continue to be here for yourself. And having that sturdy sense inside yourself, I think, does enable us to have more courage. I also want to note that I don't think that being calm or sitting with yourself is the only way to be calm. I think you can find calmness in so many different ways. I think it's just harder to even get to know what works for you if you're not paying attention to how you're feeling, right?
So
you can certainly feel calm or notice yourself maybe feeling calm in like a group setting or with a certain person. You feel really safe. Hopefully with your therapist, you feel safe. It's just one example, but it could be like a maternal figure in your life or your partner or whoever, paternal figure. So I don't mean to say that, you know, with yourself is the only place to kind of practice this, but I do think it's a way to practice slowing down and being really closely in touch with how it is that you're feeling. So I just remember this example or this situation kind of a few years ago. I was laying in bed going to sleep, and I felt like there was this humming inside of me. Like that's like this electricity, this energy. And I didn't like it, because I really thought that it was associated in my mind with striving and drive mode. And first of all, I'm trying to go to sleep, but I also was like, I just don't want to only exist in this mode, right? Like this doesn't feel healthy to me or sustainable to me. And it really is guiding my behavior. And so I wanted to practice and know what it felt like to feel calm. And so I just imagined really what would someone who was calm, what would they feel like? What would it feel like for them? And I really, really tried to practice that in my body to kind of call that to mind and slow myself down in my whole body, my breathing, everything. Obviously, it helps with sleep, but it's also a practice that carried over to throughout the day. I can notice kind of where I'm at, and through breathing, through intentionality, slowing down, I can bring myself back to the place that I really want to be operating from. Because I think also mentally you have a different perspective. It's more spacious. It's more
present focused.
Maybe creative, present focused. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. When you're not in just drive mode or threat mode, when you're in this calm state, it really allows you to open up your whole perspective. So that felt important to me to pay attention to and to shift. And I think what that could look like for different people might be different, like what gets folks there. But even just attuning to oneself and having that awareness is, I think, generally speaking, the first step.
Totally. Yeah. It really starts with awareness, which I feel like whenever I talk about this with folks, I'm always emphasizing like simple, but not easy. Simple, but not easy. Like, right. It is so simple when we talk about it, and it is so freaking hard, right, to remember in the moment, because to be aware in the moment. And that's why we've talked about, you and I have been talking about this forever, this idea of building a muscle, right? Mm-hmm. It really is building a muscle that then is more capable of lifting, of doing things, of, you know, like of bringing awareness to the moment. Two of the, you know, a couple of the things that I find really helpful for myself when I, in the moment where I can bring some awareness to the moment and knowing and know that, oh, okay, like I am in threat mode right now, or I'm in drive mode. I'm not in touch with my soothing affiliative system at all. And it feels helpful for me to try to tap into that a little bit. A couple of things that, and you mentioned this, breath is like number one for me, important. We talk about this in CFT all the time, breath work, and using our breath to regulate our nervous systems, right? Because if we can slow our breath, deepen our breath, and pace our breath, that gives us a lot of power to be regulating our parasympathetic nervous systems, when oftentimes it's our sympathetic nervous systems for a lot of us that are online constantly, right? That sympathetic is threat mode, fight or flight response, and parasympathetic is this, for many people, unfamiliar rest and digest, slow down the body response. So for me, breath is super important and helpful, right? If I can notice like, ooh, just take one deep, slow breath with a really slow exhale. I've gotten to a point after a lot of practice and a lot of like trying and experimenting with this, that is something that really roots me very powerfully. The other thing that I pay a lot of attention to are my muscles. So for me, oftentimes I can notice like my eyebrows being furrowed and I'm holding so much tension right here in this center point of my forehead. And I notice like all the muscles around in the skin of my forehead kind of pulling, centering into that furrow. And sometimes I'll notice in my jaw, like clenching my jaw. Mm-hmm. Another big one for me, I've noticed this so much recently, my hands are always in fists.
Huh.
Like under my desk, in my lap, in tight fists.
Right. Tense,
holding, I'm clenching. It's like, I'm trying to get through something. I'm trying to survive something, or I'm trying to brace myself for something. And so for me, a lot of a very simple sort of strategy is opening my hands, releasing the fists.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can relate. I hold so much tension in my stomach. I don't know. Yeah. That's for me. Where I'm like, okay, let's let it go. You don't have to clench up, hold in.
Yeah.
And it really shifts my headspace. First of all, I become aware of the fact that something in this situation is making me really tense, whether it's my own mind, which sometimes
frequently it's my own mind.
But also sometimes it alerts me to this thing of like, there's some interesting power dynamic in this relationship, or I'm feeling threatened. And so, you know, it alerts me to information, basically, right? Yeah. That like for years and years, I wasn't paying attention to. And now I'm like, ooh, if I'm tense all the time, what is that? What's happening there right now? And then can I release it? And can I come into this moment in a more, present moment kind of focused way, and realize that like, no, my whole life is not on the line.
Yeah.
If this conversation works out or it doesn't, or what, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. This also makes me think, I want to say this because some people may already be aware of this, but this is so important that when we're talking about awareness, we're talking about awareness of what is happening in the moment. That's the biggest piece of this awareness, is knowing like where I am in time and space in this exact moment, what my surroundings are, what's actually happening right now. Because so often, I'll just say, and this is not, you know, this is not a rule. There are exceptions to this, but very often when we're in drive mode, we're focused on the future. We're focused on trying to get something or trying to make something happen, right? Drive mode tends to be very future oriented. Threat mode is also not focused on the present generally.
No, our future or past.
It's future or past, yeah. Generally, if we're in a really dangerous situation in the moment, our systems will kick into gear and they'll do what they need to do. Yeah, they'll do what they need to do. We'll freeze, we'll fight, we'll flee, right? Our systems know what to do. But then it's all the time that actually we're in an objectively safe situation, but we're ruminating about something that's already happened that we can't change or control, or we're worrying about something that hasn't happened yet but could happen. And our threat systems are activated just because our minds are in those places and our bodies follow suit. Right? So I think one of the really important things for me in my mind about this soothing affiliative system that we're talking about is it's very present focused.
Bringing yourself back to the the moment that you're in, the body that you're in, grounding yourself.
Right.
And reminding yourself of your safety.
Exactly. And I think another piece that's super important to clarify is some people may hear the words like peace, contentment, safeness, and think, oh, happiness. No, no. Different. That be occupying our soothing affiliative system does not mean necessarily being happy.
Right.
If anything, actually, I identify happiness and excitement more with the drive system, actually. You know, I can see I've experienced when my soothing system is online and I'm in that space, I have felt happiness there, right? But there's actually a very different quality of feeling between happiness and contentment or calm.
Right.
Those are different feeling experiences that we want to look out for and kind of look out for the subtleties, nuances in those, you know, between those experiences.
No, exactly.
Can I ask a question that I think relates to what we're talking about that seems really important here? Loneliness is on my mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When we're thinking about what it means to look at the relationships mm-hmm. we have with ourselves, and we're talking about time where we're not spending time with other people, we're on our own. I don't know. I have talked to so many people who speak about that experience being intolerable.
Yeah, well, Glennon Doyle calls it the hot loneliness.
Yeah, what is the
hot? We want to just escape from, we want to leave, even if you come in any contact with it or you feel like it's coming close, right? Then it's like, I'm out of here. I don't know exactly what is underneath that, what that's about. And it could be different for different people, likely is. So I don't have an answer for that, but I think absolutely these things are all tied up together. I think you can get to a place of comfort with being on your own and alone, and but it takes practice like anything else. And we kind of don't think it does. We kind of think it's like our default mode. Like, definitely we'll know how to be calm.
Right.
And it's just, if you haven't practiced it, why would you think that you'd be any good at it?
Right.
So when we get to that moment, we actually are like, ooh, never mind. I'll go do something else because I don't actually know how to do this.
Right. Or that voice, that self-critic kind of kicks in. It's like, you should be able to handle this. This should feel good that you have this free mm-hmm. time right now, or this unstructured quiet time, or like there's something about this existential fear that mm-hmm. can set in when you finally do slow down and you're on your own, which is like, I'm alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that feeling, that those words have different, you know, implications for different people. But I think, you know, that's a scary experience.
And I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's not just the existential crisis of I'm alone. I think it allows space for all of our existential
crises, yeah,
to come up to the surface, right? If you're focused on, oh my gosh, you know, look at this person's vacation or look at these new sneakers. I don't know. This is just me. You're not thinking, oh my gosh, all the people I love are going to die and I'm going to die. And what's the point of life? Right? Like,
right. Or like, I don't have a partner. I don't have a home. I'm not where I want to be in this life. And mm-hmm. it's going by so fast and I'm missing out.
It's
I'm
way easier to be like, oh, nice, funny meme.
Right. Just, yep. Lost in TikTok, lost in Instagram. Yep. So maybe in beginning to think about calm and what it means to actually cultivate a state of calm for ourselves, I'm curious, like for you, what are some of the things just recently that you have mm-hmm. been thinking about or doing with some degree of intentionality to, create greater calm for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing I would say, big shift in my life has just been understanding that I need to prioritize it, that it's not just going to happen. So I need to create calm for myself and build that muscle. And early on, I think the way that I got there easiest or best was through yoga. So again, being very present moment focused with, you know, flows or challenging poses or really having to focus on your breath work. That was a very useful way to practice the process of being in the present moment and kind of bringing my body to a place of calm. What I'm doing right now that most helps is this thing called floating, which I absolutely adore. I would not recommend it for someone who is very new to sitting with themselves and their thoughts. But it's essentially, you go into this kind of like sensory deprivation chamber. So there's no light, there's no sound. You get into a tub of water.
And it's very high salinity water. It's mm-hmm. super, super high salinity. So it's kind of like yeah. the Dead Sea.
Exactly. So your body can totally float.
Yeah.
And the water temperature isn't really different from the temperature of the air. So there's not this big differential because part of your body is sort of out of the water, right? If you're floating. And I do these 60-minute sessions. And the first 10 minutes are really just to get the kind of like clanging monkeys in my head. Be quiet. Stop thinking about my grocery list or, you know, whatever else. And so it's just to have all that crap settle and to come into the present moment. And there's literally zero distraction, right? There's nothing. And I just push myself kind of continuously to let go a little bit more, to surrender a little bit more. In my body, the tension, I realize I'm continuing to try to hold myself up even as I'm floating. And so it's just kind of deepening the letting go process.
Mm-hmm.
And I find after 60 minutes, I really truly feel as though I've shaved 2 years of stress off my life. Like I am in such a different state. And so that's become a regular practice for me, which has been wonderful. But obviously, we can't all go just float in a chamber all day long. Like, there have to be things that I can do, you know, within meetings or after certain, you know, activating events or phone calls or whatever. You know what I mean? So yeah. There's all kinds of things like breath work and little soothing acts. We've talked before about kind of like, you know, giving yourself like a kind of hug. I think it makes such a difference to like have this real concrete felt sense that you're supporting yourself. So I'll often do that, put my hand on my heart or something like that to remind myself that I'm here for myself. So those are like little kind of more micro ways that I can help to get calm. What about you?
So, you know, I would say consistency is not my strong suit. Like I have gotten into the habit before, like even this past year, of having like a month at a time where every day for a month I started out my morning. Like the first thing I would do, you know, before even looking at my phone, turning on the computer, even getting a cup of coffee, the first thing I would do is in my pajamas, I would sit right next to my bed and I would do a 10-minute guided meditation. And I did that for a month and it was amazing. Like I really noticed some pretty profound effects of that. And then of course, because consistency is not my strong suit, I stopped and I didn't continue that. I also was doing a yoga thing where for many weeks in a row, I would get on the mat and do this practice, which was really helpful for me, also really helpful for my back because I've been having back issues. And then again, that felt hard for me to sustain. So I'm trying to also give myself some grace and practice, like it's, you know, knowing that it's okay, you know, it's okay to break routines. It's okay to fall out of routines and feel like you need to kind of pick yourself back up again.
And our brain is very much wired for novelty. So I think that that's something to give yourself a little compassion around too.
Yeah, I like that, right? That like while things are new and feel excited, sometimes that's the reward. And then when things don't feel new anymore and they feel like work, which a lot of these practices do, I mean, I'm jealous of your floating experience because that doesn't sound like work. That sounds really blissful. But I feel like the yoga I was doing or the, you know, that there was something about it that felt like work to me a little bit. And I think that's important is that oftentimes in cultivating calm, it's not always going to feel peaceful and fun and easy, right?
It can feel effortful.
It can definitely feel
effortful. You're practicing something.
Yes, yes. So I've noticed for myself, one thing that I've been doing daily is I take a walk. And it's actually a pretty long walk. It's an hour kind of loop that I do. So it's a long walk. And I find myself, the novelty has not worn off. Like I actually find myself looking forward to that ritual every day. So that's something that I do. I've also noticed myself recently like really attending to the senses, my senses of taste and smell. So I recently kind of bought this new perfume and scent that I really love, and I've been really enjoying sort of spraying just a little bit on my wrists and kind of dabbing my neck. And that is a scent that I find myself during the day tuning into, which it helps. It is a calming scent for me, and it kind of brings me back to what's going on. So my sense of smell has been important to me recently. And then my sense of taste too. I've noticed that like warm beverages, coffee or tea recently, like has also been something that has been helping me kind of slow down, ground, pay attention to, you know, what I'm tasting, what I'm experiencing. I think there's something about the temperature too, the warmth.
I was going to say for me, I've been much more attuned to like texture, like cozy blankets, cozy clothes, like not just being really aware of like what feels soft and yeah, kind of like yummy to me right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, interesting, not texture, but temperature wise, I've been going to bed every night with like a hot water bottle. And it's been very cold where I live for a while. It's only starting to warm up. So that's a part of it. It adds comfy, comforting heat. But there's something about that heat and like the, you know, water in a rubber water bottle is soft. It kind of is buoyant. And there's something about like the texture, the warmth, holding that feels very comforting to me. Mm-hmm. So that's been a big one too. And then just like you said earlier, I have always been a huge proponent of hand on the heart. That's something that I often do daily for myself and with myself as sort of a rooting reminder of like, I'm here for you and come back to the sensation of what it feels like to feel the warmth of your hand on your chest.
Feel supported.
Yeah. Feel supported, feel rooted. Yeah. Watched over.
Like cared for,
watched over. Yeah. That's sort of the feeling I get from it. So that's something that I found myself doing.
And I think this conversation even demonstrates how these things, like what you need and what works for you can change over time, and you can experiment with different things, and that's okay. It's not like, okay, find your, you know, five things that work. I mean, if you can find five things that calm you, then more power to you. But it is kind of starting out on this quest of really being curious about yourself and what makes you content, and then just continuing to build those things into your life and realizing, oh, I kind of like this and I kind of like that. And it's just like it's a fun adventure, actually.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we are always evolving, growing, expanding, changing beings. You know, our lives are always expanding and changing, and sometimes harder, sometimes easier, sometimes, you know, so I think treating this as not like a one and done, oh, I've achieved it, I figured out the key to calm.
Right.
But it's like, no, like this is something that I know for myself, I'm constantly going to have to grapple with every day, every week, every month in different ways, right? That it's also going to be a process that's evolving and changing with me.
Though I will say, I think I have found the key for me, which I've forgotten to mention, which is a weighted blanket.
Oh.
And I'm not kidding you about it. When I went to the dentist like a year ago, and they put the weighted, you know,
the vest, the x-ray vest.
Yeah. Exactly, because they were taking x-rays. And then the technician went to go take it off, and I was like, oh no, I love this. I love how I feel. Please, can you leave it on for the rest of the appointment? And she's like, what? All right. And let me keep it on. And then I came home and I was like, all right, I guess I need a weighted blanket, because that was a game changer for me.
Weighted blankets are great. I also have one of those.
I get the hype.
So we want to leave listeners off with this idea and this practice. So the first idea is to do a bit of a three circles exercise for yourself. So to think about, and again, there's a handout on Compassion Collective or compassion-collective.com, our website, that you can download and do this. But basically what you're going to want to do is just see for yourself, like, where have I been lately in my life? How big is my threat system? They're each three circles, right? How big is my threat system? How big is my drive system? How big has my soothing affiliative system been? You can also like get creative and write sort of associations in the margin, like, oh, these things have really been activating or contributing to threat mode for me, or look at all of this stuff that I've had on my to-do list that I'm constantly just working towards, right? Drive mode. Or what are some of the people or experiences or some of the things for yourselves that help to cultivate the soothing and calm that we're talking about that you might be able to sort of associate with the soothing affiliative system? And then the next kind of challenge that maybe each of us can commit to is just thinking about today, on whatever day you listen to this episode and hear this conversation, participate in this conversation, what is one way that each of us can commit to cultivating an ounce, at least an ounce of calm in our lives today? So Suze, can I ask you, if you're just thinking about the rest of your day today, what is one intentional step you want to take in trying to cultivate that calm?
We just got this very fun kind of egg-shaped chair at our house, right? And it's a beautiful day here in San Diego. And so I am going to just take a book or maybe my journal and go out to the egg-shaped chair and enjoy it. And maybe just spend 10 to 20 minutes today. No phone, no ulterior motives or goals, no distractions. Just trying to really be present there. Yeah, I think that will help to lower the cortisol levels for a bit. How about you?
I think I am going to commit to a bowl of hot chicken noodle soup. Going again with my temperature, the warmth, and the taste that's helpful to me right now. So I'm going to do that. And I think while I eat it, I'm either going to sit outside and just without, again, me too, I'm paying attention to not having my phone. So I'm going to sit outside without my phone and just watch what's happening around me on my street in my neighborhood while I eat that warm chicken noodle soup. So that's my goal for today.
I love it. Okay. So listeners, if you can think of your own goal for today and commit to following through. And I would say maybe trying to check in a little bit before you do the thing and a little bit during, a little bit after. See exactly what that activity does for your nervous system.
Thank you for listening to Compassion Collective. You can visit us on the web at compassion-collective.com. Please also consider donating to our Patreon fund at patreon.com/compassioncollective. We'll see you next time.